Thank you, Mr. Fay, and certainly welcome to any of the visitors we have here. You have probably heard just as much as I have over the years the claim that many make that because Jesus kept God's law and he kept them for us, that we don't have to. So I want to look at that just briefly as a lead into what I'm going to talk about here, because let's carry that reasoning a little further. I mean, if that's true, then what does it mean for us that since Jesus overcame Satan, does that mean that we don't have to overcome Satan? Obviously, that really makes no sense, because we do have to overcome Satan, and we do need to keep God's laws. But instead of doing that for us so that we wouldn't have to, Jesus actually kept God's laws. He overcame Satan. And part of the function and purpose for that was as an example for us. So what I want to do today is take a look at Matthew 4, if you would turn there with me. Matthew 4, and also in Luke 4, we're given the account of when Jesus had gone into the wilderness. He had fasted for 40 days and 40 nights, and after the fast was when Satan came to him to test him. And I want to focus on that today. Here we are in Matthew 4, and verses 1 through 4. I'm just going to look at the first test that Jesus had to endure here. Then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, afterward he was hungry. Now when the tempter came to him, he said, "If you are the Son of God, command that these stones become bread." But he answered and said, "It is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God." Now this was just the first of the three trials that we are told about that Jesus had to face. But let's take a look at this situation and take a look at the attitude behind Satan's challenge to Jesus. What was that attitude? What kind of thinking did that reflect? What was it that Jesus had to overcome and reject? Because it's important to understand this, because that helps us learn also how we can overcome Satan and reject his ways. So I want to look at this trial of bread, for lack of better terms to call it, this trial of bread that Jesus went through, and how it can help us to overcome Satan. So let's look again at verse 3 here. It says, "If you are the Son of God, command that these stones become bread." Now Matthew stated that after Jesus had fasted for 40 days and 40 nights, that he was hungry. That is probably one of the biggest understatements in the Bible that we can see. But when you think about it, Jesus had a very urgent need. He was weak. He hadn't eaten. He hadn't drunk for that period of time. So Satan is now saying, "Hey, you have the power. You can do something about this." So one of these underlying attitudes is that Satan wants, he is challenging Christ, but the same is true for us. He's basically saying, "Look, you have something that God has given you. Why don't you use that for your own benefit? Go ahead. Use what God's given you. Help yourself out." Now, are there ways that we use what God has given us for our own purposes? We've seen this happen a lot, even fairly recently. We know of many of those who have taken what God has given them in order to try to create a following for themselves. How many times we've heard, I'm paraphrasing here, but some form of the statement, "Well, you know what? You need to follow me because I'm the only one who is teaching God's truth about, and then fill in the blank. So many people have done that. Say, look, I'm the one teaching God's truth. Therefore, if you want to stay near to God, you need to follow me. But you know what? That attitude is nothing new, is it? That attitude has been around for a long time. Mr. Armstrong, talking in his autobiography, talked about how when he was first starting congregations and teaching people what God has been showing him, as the congregation would grow and he would move somewhere else to start another group, to teach another group, someone would invariably come in to that congregation and draw them away to themselves. So he saw the result of that. But it goes back even further. We don't necessarily need to turn there, but I want to read to you just to show you how this attitude has consistently been present among humanity. John wrote about it in his third epistle, verses 9 and 10. John wrote, I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to have the preeminence among them, does not receive us. Therefore, if I come, I will call to mind his deeds, which he does, prating against us with malicious words. And not content with that, he himself does not receive the brethren, and forbids those who wish to, putting them out of the church. Here we see someone who has, in his own eyes, elevated himself to a position of leadership, to one who can make decisions and has the authority. Paul encountered the same type of attitude in 1 Corinthians. You can write that down. 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verses 6 and 7. Paul wrote, Now these things, brethren, I have figuratively transferred to myself and Apollos for your sakes, that you may not learn in us not to think beyond what is written, that none of you may be puffed up on behalf of one against the other. For who makes you differ from another? And what do you have that you did not receive? Now, if you did not indeed receive it, why do you boast as if you had not received it? Basically, Paul is saying, look, you got these people here who are boasting about what they know. But it's obviously something they had received from God. And yet they're acting as if they somehow managed to come up with this knowledge, this understanding, all on their own. And therefore, that makes them superior. That makes them better. And Paul's saying, no. If you are different, if you have an understanding and knowledge, think about why that is. Who made you different? It was God. It was nothing you did on your own. Peter. In 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 2 to 3. In 2 Peter chapter 2, again, we have a similar situation where Peter writes, And many will follow their destructive ways, because of whom the way of truth will be blasphemed. By covetousness, they will exploit you with deceptive words. For a long time, their judgment has not been idle, and their destruction does not slumber. Again, people who are putting themselves in position of so-called leadership because of what God has given them. And we're all familiar with the example in the Old Testament, the trouble that Moses had with Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. God clearly had given them, the nation of Israel in general. God said, you will be a kingdom of priests for me, as an example to the other nations around them. But even more specifically with Korah, he was one of the Levites. God had given him and other Levites special responsibilities for tending to the tabernacle and serving God. But were they satisfied with that? No, they weren't. Instead, they took that position of responsibility, and in their own minds they thought, whoa, we should be the ones who are leading. And they actually went to Moses and challenged him. And Moses did the only thing he could do. He humbled himself and turned to God, because it was God who establishes the authority and the responsibility. In every one of these examples, the underlying attitude that we see is, hey, I have something, and, well, it's me first. I'm thinking of myself before I'm thinking about anybody else. But for as far back as we have gone, showing examples of this attitude, it really goes back further than that. Where does this me first, I'm going to get what I want attitude originate? It originates with the very one who was there testing Jesus. It originates with Satan. Turn with me, if you will. Familiar passage in Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 14. And we're going to look at verses 12 through 14. Here in Isaiah 14, we see the source of this me first attitude. I need to be the one in charge of everyone else. Isaiah 14, verses 12 through 14. How you are fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How you are cut down to the ground, you who weakened the nations. For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit on the mount of the congregation, on the farthest sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Satan was the pinnacle of God's creation. But he used that which he had received from God to start thinking about himself. Thinking because he had been put in a position of authority and responsibility over a third of the angels here on the earth, he carried it further. Well, if I can be charged here, and I'm obviously better, at least that's his thought method there, than anyone else here, I should be put in charge of everything. He really thought that he could replace God, forgetting that it was God who gave him his abilities, God who gave him everything that he had, including his life. But that attitude was, hey, I can do so much. I need to serve myself first. So when he challenged Jesus to turn those stones to bread, the attitude that was behind that challenge was this self-serving, this me-first attitude. And Jesus recognized that that was the case. Now, most of us will probably never find ourselves in a position where we will take what God has given us and assume that we can take over leadership or gather a following to ourselves. Hopefully, none of us will ever be in that position. We do not want to be there. But does that mean that we don't have to be aware of this attitude? Does that mean that we do not have to overcome that attitude? Because guarantee, Satan is right there, every opportunity he can, to say to you, you know what? You've got gifts and talents that you have, ignoring where we received them, trying to get us to think, well, I have this, I can do that. How can I help out myself? Do we ever encounter that situation? We certainly do. And another way that that shows itself is when we start to compare ourselves with other people. There have been a number of times, I'm sure you've had a situation too, where you start thinking about some of the things that people teach that supposedly come from the Bible. You know, I started out this sermon with one example of that. Oh, Jesus kept the law for us. We don't have to. And you see that, and you hear what they're explaining, what they're teaching, and you think, how can they believe that? Can't they see that it's clearly in the Bible that that's not the case? I'm sure glad I don't believe that. I mean, I know better. Well, yeah, I do know better, but why is that? It's not like you or I or anyone else here has, at some point in our life, picked up the Bible and started reading through and thought, wow, look what I've discovered here. This is something new. I'm glad I came across that because I'm not sure if anybody else knows that or not. Now, any understanding that we get from this, any way that we change our lives because of what we see in God's Word, is not something that we've done on our own. It's by the power of God's Spirit. But if we forget that, it's very easy to start looking at others and say, oh, well, you know, I'm better at this. I'm maybe more righteous at that because I do this and I do that. And they're not doing that understanding, even within the church. It can be too easy to look at others and think, well, you know, I would never do that. I don't know why they're doing that. Isn't that kind of the same thing? Where maybe not we're saying, well, me first, I need to get what I can, but it's this attitude that, well, you know, maybe I'm just a little bit better because of these comparisons. But that attitude has the same roots, doesn't it? You see, because if God had not given us the understanding that we do have, would we really be any different than anybody else, any other human? No, we would not. Because Satan is out there deceiving and blinding this world. And if it weren't for God's intervention, we'd be in the same situation. Instead of boasting about that, we need to be thankful. But again, instead of elevating ourselves, we need to remember, as we're being thankful for that, we need to remember to be humble. We need to remember humility, because on our own, we would never come to this understanding. We would never be in the position where we could realize that there are changes that have to be made in our lives in order to conform to God's Word. And that humility is very important as a building block for that understanding. Turn to 1 Peter, if you will, please. 1 Peter, chapter 5, and verses 5 through 6. Here Peter is giving instructions to the brethren. So in 1 Peter 5, starting verse 5, likewise, you younger people, submit yourselves to your elders. Yes, all of you be submissive to one another, and be clothed with humility. For God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you in due time. God does resist the proud. This whole situation where Satan was testing Jesus there in the wilderness. Satan was filled with pride, vanity, conceit, self-centeredness. And Jesus, as the firstborn of the family of God, was resisting that and did so successfully. It's an example to us, too, that we need to resist that attitude. To resist it and to reject it. So we, too, can overcome it. Paul also, back again to the Corinthian church, there was something there that he frequently had to address. because this attitude was very strong. In 2 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul is writing to the Corinthians here. 2 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 12. For we dare not class ourselves or compare ourselves with those who commend themselves, but they, measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves, are not wise. Look at this situation here. Paul's basically, maybe even a little tongue-in-cheek here, said, well, you know, we don't dare compare ourselves to them because we'd never meet their standard. And what were these people doing? They were using themselves as their own standard. Notice how he says they are comparing themselves among themselves. Well, guess what? If you use yourself as the standard by which you need to live, you're doing that perfectly, aren't you? And no one else is going to meet that standard. Not one. And that's what these people were doing, these men were doing. They were looking around. They had been given some understanding. They had the knowledge that God had given them through the teachings of Paul and Apollos and others. But instead of remaining humble about it, instead of being clothed in humility, they puffed themselves up. Whoa! Look what I know. And then they started comparing themselves. Well, we know this, but these people over here, they don't. And so they set up an artificial standard by which they judged everyone else. They compared themselves to themselves. They were commending themselves. Oh, look how well I'm keeping what I know. Yeah, they set their own standard. But it was the wrong standard to set. We have one standard that we need to strive, we need to live to meet. That one standard is the Word of God. His instructions, His attitudes, His Spirit. That is the standard that we have to live by. That is the standard to which we compare our own lives. And when we do that, if we do that honestly with ourselves, there is no way we cannot be humbled. Because each and every one of us has so far to go. But because of the grace of God and the strength of His Spirit working in our lives, we are going in the right direction. Unless we allow ourselves to be distracted, to be diverted from trying to attain that standard. And that is exactly what Satan was trying to do. He tries it with every one of us every day. And this is what he tried to do there in the wilderness with Jesus Christ. We can't use what God has given us to elevate ourselves to feel superior to others. Because you know what? You know where that attitude originated. Again, let's take a look at that. This time, let's go to Ezekiel in chapter 28. Passages with which we're familiar. But it's always good to go back to see the source of what we're fighting against. Ezekiel 28 and verse 17. Your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. You corrupted your wisdom for the sake of your splendor. I cast you to the ground. I laid you before kings that they might gaze at you. As I mentioned earlier, Satan was the pinnacle, the apex of God's creation. And he let that start to cloud his judgment. And because of that self-centeredness, it began to affect the way he thought, began to affect the way he judged things, And Ezekiel writes here, you corrupted your wisdom. And what was his wisdom? It was the teaching and the instruction that God had given him. But now that he was so self-centered, so focused on himself, that wisdom was corrupted. Don't need to turn there, but Paul sums up this attitude quite well in 2 Corinthians chapter 10 and in verses 17 through 18. Paul writes, "But he who glories, let him glory in the Lord. For not he who commends himself is approved, but whom the Lord commends." That pretty much sums up this entire attitude that Satan was trying to trick, trying to trap Jesus into succumbing to glorify yourself. Instead, Jesus resisted it and rejected it. But how? How did he, as weak as he was, how was he able to have the strength, the fortitude to reject Satan's simple suggestion? Would it have been a sin for him to change those stones to bread? That action by itself, no. But the sin would have come into succumbing to the attitude that Satan had and agreeing with it. And say, well, yeah, it wouldn't hurt this time. Well, yes, it would. How Jesus was able to stand up and resist Satan, and how he was able to reject this attitude and overcome it, is that he kept his focus on what really matters. His focus was firmly planted on the will of God and seeing that God's plan would be carried out. In John chapter 5, verse 30, we see that this was the way Jesus lived his life, the way he thought, and what he did. And that never changed. In John 5, verse 30, Jesus clearly states, "I can of myself do nothing. As I hear, I judge. And my judgment is righteous, because I do not seek my own will, but the will of the Father who sent me." Jesus always pointed to God the Father. Yeah, he could have changed those stones. He could have done any number of things because he had the power to do that. But that wasn't the reason, that was not the purpose of why he was there. His focus was always to do the work and the will of God. And if anyone claims to follow Jesus, but they don't point you to God the Father, or worse, they point you to themselves, then get away. Flee from that people, because they are not following the example of Jesus Christ. Paul warned in Colossians, we won't turn there necessarily, but he says, "Let no one cheat you of your reward, taking delight in false humility and worship of angels." If we succumb, if we allow someone to say, "Hey, you know, I've got this understanding, I've had this knowledge, follow me." And if we do that, we're succumbing to that same attitude that Satan has, and we'll be cheated of that reward. Jesus stayed focused on the purpose of God. Look at his answer in verse Matthew 4:4. "But he answered and said, 'It is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God.'" The Greek here is actually very emphatic, and more literally translated, "Not by bread alone shall man live." This physical life is not the life that we need to focus on. "Not by bread alone shall man live, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God." Jesus pointed to something better, something more long-term, something beyond the physical needs. And he had physical needs at that moment. extreme physical needs. But he looked past that. He looked beyond because he knew that there was a better plan ahead, a better life ahead. And he served as example for all of us to not focus so much on our physical needs and what we need here and now. And God will take care of that. But our focus needs to be on what God has promised to us as an inheritance. If we live by every word that proceeds from Him. That is how Jesus was able to reject, able to resist, and able to overcome Satan. Because He kept His focus on what was right. And gave us that example too. To keep our focus on what's ahead. What God has promised to us as an inheritance. The life that we desire is not this physical life. The life that we desire is spirit. And that only comes by putting away that get attitude of Satan. Use what you have. Help yourself. Me first. Job wrote, or in the book of Job, "You've granted me life and favor, and your providence have preserved my spirit." Everything we have is from God, and so we need to focus our lives to serving God, to doing His will, and living by His word. Because that's really what matters the most for us. So how do we use what God gives to us? He's given us a lot. Knowledge and understanding of His ways, the strength to live by that, open communications, prayer, to be able to contact Him whenever we need to, whenever we want to be in touch with Him constantly. But do we use those gifts that God has given us to position ourselves over others? Do we use it to exalt ourselves in our own eyes? Do we use what comes from God in a self-serving manner? If so, remember that that attitude, those actions come from Satan. Jesus rejected that attitude and expects the same from us. So to overcome Satan, we need to use God's gifts to serve others, not ourselves. And in doing so, we reject those attitudes which Satan wants us to fall prey to. And we do that by keeping our focus on God's plan, and by striving to live by His standards, just as Jesus did in keeping God's laws.